think perhaps are real. And Carlin Becchia joins us this morning with a book called Monsters. Hi, Carlin. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
We are doing well today, and so good. Glad that you called us, because we love this book. The subtitle, The Lore, Gore, and Science Behind Your Favorite Monsters. And, Carlin, also, I appreciate how you not only look at the science, but you also looked at the language. It's just even the word monster, how that came about.
Yeah, I didn't know that myself when I'm researching it, that the word monster comes from monstrums, which were, you have to remember, in the Renaissance court, anything that was strange or out of the ordinary to them was a sign of ill will or evil to come. So any deformity in anyone, they were called monstrums, and that's where we get the word monster from.
Yeah, that's fascinating. That's a Latin word, and we have others that were influenced. So there you have actually a theological influence, because they thought it was a sign of God things or pretending things, right?
Yes, exactly. Even a comet falling out of the sky, people were very superstitious, so everything meant something.
All right, now, in your chapter, let's look at a couple of things. One, how were you inspired? What inspired you to write this?
Well, I have to say, I was the kid that really didn't gravitate towards science. I was more of a history buff, and I discovered this love of science much later in life. So I joke that this book made me a reluctant polymath, in the sense that it was way out of my depth when I started researching it, because, it covers neuroscience and biology and things that I really didn't know about beforehand. And I thought science, monsters, was such an excellent way to get other reluctant readers interested in science, because all kids love monsters, and I saw that when I would go out to schools. Kids just gravitate towards monsters. And I thought it was a way kind of to trick them to love science through monsters. I'm always trying to trick kids.
Well, yeah, that's a good thing. Carlin Becchia is our guest. And again, you have written a number of children's books, so you have some experience in tricking them, right?
Yes, and I'm a parent myself, so I'm always tricking my own kids.
Now, you dedicate a whole chapter to werewolves. This is fascinating, because we think about Lon Chaney, and we think about that sort of mix of what happens to somebody. But you bring the science into this, too, now, because it goes back long before the movies created werewolves.
Yes, the original werewolves were not as campy. They really came out of the witch hunts. And what people would do to interrogate supposed werewolves is they would literally cut them open, because they believed that there was some evil inside them. So there was a lot of torture involved to discover werewolves.
Mess. It's incredible. And in it, you have a kind of a lighthearted look at the difference between werewolves and us and other things out there, too. That's fun.
You know what I was trying to get at without hitting them over the head with it, that we are animals, too. We are beasts. And there's a lot of similarities between wolves and humans.
And you also have a very handy chart that says no werewolves actually have killed people, although coyotes may have, they may be getting blamed for it.
Exactly.
This is fun. this is really great. Now tell us, again, you said that there were things like the word monstrous, where it came from, and monsters, things that you didn't know when you were researching this. What else surprised you?
One of the things that surprised me the most, and maybe this was because when I was a kid in middle grade age, I didn't learn about Hiroshima and the true story behind Godzilla, and I was fascinated by that story, just the eyewitness accounts of when the bomb was dropped and how that movie came out of such heartache. So, I mean, the book is lighthearted and humorous, but that was my one serious chapter in the book. And I think I was so drawn to it because as a child, I was really scared of nuclear disasters. If you're of a certain age growing up, you were actually, scared of nuclear disasters. So that chapter goes into how to survive a nuclear disaster and what would happen, because Godzilla's breath is obviously nuclear.
Well, I definitely grew up in the age of The Thing and some of those great movies. I forget what's the name of the one with the ants that grew out of a nuclear experiment and raided the sewers of Los Angeles. It was a great movie. But Godzilla was a sympathetic character that came out of it.
Yes. So. Yeah, we tend to forget that when Japanese audiences first saw that film, they left in tears. It was very real for them. And over the years, you know, Godzilla has gone through many reiterations, and he's almost gotten to a point of kind of humor at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But the original is it's really there's something about watching a film in black and white that just feels more real or grainy to
mm-hmm.
me, at least.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watched that film, I kind of, because I had never seen it, when I was researching this book, I watched the original, and I was really taken aback by it.
Well, thanks to The Walking Dead, zombies are back in full
yes.
force.
Yeah.
So what is it about zombies that actually attract people into thinking that that might be, we might need to have an apocalyptic plan?
You know, I researched a lot on preppers. I'm not a prepper person myself. I'm
mm-hmm.
the type of person, like, in a hurricane, I don't have water in the house. And there's a certain sort of mindset, I think, with fear that we want to be prepared. And I remember, and I completely stole this, and I credited them, the CDC a few years ago, they came out with this zombie apocalypse plan of what people should have in their house
right.
in case a zombie virus breaks out. And you understand what they were really trying to do is get people prepared for pandemics and epidemics
mm-hmm.
because it's the same type of supplies that you need to have in your house if there's a zombie apocalypse or there's a viral pandemic. So I have that a page in the book about how to survive zombie apocalypse. But it's really how you should be prepared for any sort of natural disaster or pandemic. Or I researched the 1918 influenza breakout, which is also a fascinating story, and there's information about that because that was very real. Zombies aren't real, but another viral epidemic like that, that actually could really happen.
And then, again, you know, I think you're inspired a lot by, like, National Geographic because because of the charts and graphs and things that show up, like states where you're most likely to be eaten by a zombie. I love this state. By the way, we're kind of in the moderate zone in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So
yeah, kids love maps. I mean, I feel like I learn better through images and infographics. So even when I was taking notes with research, I would draw little pictures to myself. And it's interesting because I've been reading a lot of studies on this that say when you actually draw taking notes, you will retain the information more. So I think anytime you present a very complex subject, like there's neuroscience in this book. It talks about what happens in the zombie brain. But when you break it down into pictures, it's really not as complicated as it sounds.
It's a book is called Monstrous, and Carlin Beccia, spelled Beccia, is the author, the lore, the gore, and science behind your favorite monsters. So is this out and available everywhere now?
Yep, just released.
And wait a minute, if I was looking through this, if I was right, there is one photograph. Everything else is illustrations, but is it the octopus? Is that a photograph?
Yes, I chose to make that a photograph because an illustration couldn't do it justice. It's a picture of someone who had caught a supposed kraken. It was really a giant squid, and he hung it over his bathtub.
Yes,
and you can see the tentacles. Also, it's an amazing picture because you think when I was researching, he kept that on hung over his bathtub, and I'm thinking, when did the guy take a bath?
Yeah, and I love that you included that one photograph there. So, again, it's called Monstrous by Carlin Beccia. And, Carlin, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's Coastal Daybreak here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM.